everybody, and welcome to another exciting episode of Bloody Good Horror. My name's Eric, and I will be your host for this evening, where we will be reviewing Brooklyn 45. If we got a couple New York-related questions for our New York-related person later. Joining me, first up tonight, that person, his name is John Schnars.
Hi, Eric.
He lives in Manhattan in an ivory tower, and he thinks he's better than you.
Decidedly not right. Brooklyn, that's for sure.
No, you would never be. How gauche. You'd never be caught in Brooklyn, I'm sure.
Plenty of nice things in Brooklyn, just to be clear.
Next up on the show, from Indiana, please welcome Casey.
I've only been close to a Brooklyn once.
I did.
That was at Schnars's house.
One of my favorite life experiences is being the only other person in the cab with Casey the first time he ever drove through Times Square.
Yeah, it was kind of magical. You can see the neon glow off my glasses as Eric watched me, you know, as my wide mouth go, awe.
It was a real coming of age moment for our Casey. This was one of those weeks where, like, we were like, what are we going to do? And Casey looked at Shudder and on the banner was like, this movie. And we're like, okay, let's do it. It did bring some Larry Fessenden into our lives. Did you, Casey, mean for your stream name to be Larry Fessenden's Liver?
Yes.
Did you think that was an accident? Like, the that typed itself in?
I thought there was a typo. I thought he wanted to say that he was a Larry Fessenden lover.
Oh, liver, because he drinks so much whiskey.
What about Larry Fessenden? If it was Larry Fessenden's lover,
I change mine right now?
Yeah.
I've had mine on the fly, but, you know.
You could be Larry Fessenden's lover, and I won't be jealous.
Where's that setting, though?
It's down. If you look in your preview screen down in the lower left, you should be able to click on it and change it.
Oh, hell yeah.
I don't know if I can change mine.
Oh, I spelled his name wrong.
That's my IT specialty is finding dumbass features.
Larry Fessenden lover. Yeah. Oh, yeah, there it is. That name. Okay, I'm leaving mine. Because
lame.
Boo.
All right, losers, get in and let's review Brooklyn 45.
This is it, Jennifer. Your big break in TV. From the prime time.
Main feature.
I'll tell you what, John, if it's one thing this movie had, it's words. Yeah. Just pages and pages of dialogue in this movie with nothing, another thing in between.
Yeah. Yes. Agree. I have feedback, but we should save it for the review.
Well, let's cram one more word in here. Mr. Schnars, please bring us the word of the day.
Eric. Today's word, and I was honestly surprised I hadn't used it before, but I did check. The word is seance. That is S-E-A-N-C-E, seance. A meeting at which people attempt to make contact with the dead, especially through the agency of a medium. Comes to us from the Latin sedare, which means to sit.
Have we never done seance before?
No, I checked and I was shocked. It passes from Latin through the old French. Soir. I don't know. S-E-O-R-S-E-O-I-R. Seance.
Love it. You ever conduct a seance, John?
No.
Little light as a feather, stiff as a board, nothing?
Maybe. Not really. I remember trying to do I didn't think of it as a seance. It was more like, we're all going to do this with just our fingers kind of thing, you know, like, cause you're like the two fingers situation or whatever.
That's the devil helping you lift that person up though, John.
Exactly.
Him and Harry Potter, you know, love it, John. Why don't you tell me about Brooklyn 45?
Sure. Brooklyn 45 comes to us from director and writer Ted Gauguin. G-E-O-G-H-E-G-A-N, Ted Gauguin. We've reviewed a number of his films. He's written more things than he's directed. I think this was his fourth film. He most recently did Satanic Panic. He wrote Satanic Panic. You remember that little TV film? He did a movie called Mohawk, which I couldn't remember if we had covered. I know a couple of us saw it. It was back 2017. And then he did the movie We Are Still Here, which I think was Larry Fessenden was in that as well, wasn't he?
Yes, and Barbara Crampton.
Yeah.
I was the only one of us that was a big fan of that one.
No, but I feel like that had like...
I liked it.
Yeah, it had like good... There were some good vibes around that movie, I remember. But yeah, that was 2015. But yeah, he's been involved in a bunch. So, you know, he's a horror guy. He's been around the horror scene. Writer, director. This stars a slew of character, actor-y, recognizable folks. Anne Ramsey, which Casey, a woman, Casey was very confused about exactly who that was before we saw the film.
Sadly, it's not Margot Martindale.
Yeah. I see where you got confused, but in any event, Ramsey, Larry Fessenden, this guy Jeremy Holm, this guy Ezra Buzzington, who Casey says he has seen in many things.
No, I know him. So, okay, here's why I know Ezra Buzzington. It came back, like Casey started jogging my memory, and then I looked it up. This guy's like it would be unfair to call him a B actor because he's actually in a lot of nowadays, like a lot of pretty well-known stuff. He does a lot of like prestige TV.
Yeah.
But he's done a lot of horror stuff. And I think what I remember him specifically from is the Hills remake, but I'm pretty sure that I interviewed this dude like 20 years ago, original BGH days. And what I remember is that at least at the time he was like very open to the online horror community and used to do a ton of interviews with people and was like very accessible, because when I think of, once I figured out who he was, I'm like, oh, I feel like I really like this dude. And I'm not like, I think that's why.
When you say The Hills, do you mean The Hills Have Eyes?
Remake.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I was like, what?
Not Hills that MTV remake? Show.
Yeah. That's what I was like. What are you talking about? Hills. Listen, his ears are one of the most notable things in this film.
They're intense.
And I just feel like I would have clocked him if I had
two alumnuses from Rob Zombie's Halloween.
Yes.
Was Fessenden in that? Did he make a cameo in that movie too?
I don't think so. He seems like the kind of dude that would show up. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah. Doesn't Fessenden seem like the kind of dude that would show up?
Who was the other guy? Jeremy Holm?
So Ezra Buzzington is like an uncredited cameo. And then our German lady here, her name is Christina Kleeb, and she was in Rob Zombie's Halloween, but was like the friend that got killed off, so she didn't get to be in the sequel.
She actually did live in Germany. It says she was born in New York City, but raised in Germany, France, Italy, and New York.
How'd you feel, John, about her accent as someone with the bloodline?
As a Nordic person,
heritage.
There is so much to discuss with this fucking movie. Like, there both is and there isn't. So here's the general plot. We have five friends. I want to say five, right? It's Anne Ramsey. So they're all military people, but they also grew up together. This is Anne Ramsey playing Maria, Larry Fessenden. They're going to visit Larry Fessenden at his house. You then have Jeremy Holm playing Archie. Ezra Buzzington plays Paul something to whatever. And then the last guy, I think, is Bob, who is the husband of Anne Ramsey's character. Anne Ramsey, importantly, narratively important, at least, plays. She was in the, and I should say, it says it's called Brooklyn 45 because it takes place December 27th, 1945. The war, World War II, has just ended. This is the psychological / horror one room play about World War II era that everyone has been demanding. So
what made me laugh is that, like, and I do have some nice things to say about it, but I have some whatever. I like the title. It's slick and it kind of rolls off the tongue. But then when I saw the title card and it's like Brooklyn, New York, 1945 or something. And then everything that's not the title fades away. And I'm like, oh, that was kind of lazy. All right. Something about seeing it laid out like that. I was like,
so you have Anne Ramsey and her husband. The husband works at the Pentagon. She was a like super successful army interrogator during World War II working in Germany. And then the other three characters, Fessenden, Archie, and Buzzington, are all army people. The most senior of which was Larry Fessenden. He's a colonel. The other two are majors. Jeremy Holm, Archie, he is accused of war crimes, which becomes important later in the movie. They're all meeting at Larry Fessenden's house because Fessenden's wife has just died. And by died, it's revealed pretty early on. This is not really a spoiler that she killed herself right after Thanksgiving. There's a lot of like discussion of like exactly when the kill. It becomes, I don't know. They're like, it's 6 weeks. But then I'm like doing the math in my head and I'm like, this, I don't know, whatever. She has killed herself. They're kind of there reuniting after the war to both celebrate that they all survived, but also to like, you know, visit their friend and kind of hopefully make him feel better. They get there and Larry Fessenden, Clive, basically says to them, she killed herself because there are Nazis that live down the street. It's a German. There is a German family that lives down the street. She thought they were Nazis. They were tormenting her. She kills herself. He wants to commune with her. So they have a seance. And then that kicks off, I don't know, a lot of interpersonal sort of back and forth.
It's pretty good.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, like, I don't know. We
Casey, Schnars is chomping at the bit here. Why don't you tell us what you think about this movie?
Okay, so there's some disappointment in this movie for me. And there's a lot of things I do like about this movie, too, at the same time, after watching it through the end. More than anything, I think I had certain expectations going in based off of the promo material for this movie. There was some, like the trailer and stuff had some, what promised to be really cool ghost effects showing up in this. And we do get to see that ghost effect, but we don't see it. But once, and that was what threw me off for the entire movie, because I kind of had to feel they're going for a period piece and throwing in some modern flair to make it crazy. And I was kind of had hopes of something like 13 Ghosts in my head for whatever reason, just based off the trailers and stuff. What we end up getting is a movie where I think I took it as they were trying to make an actual like 1940s, 50s style horror movie and give it some modern flair, and which is kind of what we got on this, because it's a lot of talking. There's not a lot of crazy effects and stuff going on. There are cool effects when they do happen, but it's not necessarily about that. And it's more about the dialogue and the talking, which I could see what they're going for. And I appreciate what they're going for, remaking a movie like that. But with what we were promised in the trailer and stuff like that, it just kind of threw me for a loop. And what getting through it the first time, it's like, well, what the hell? Where are all my cool ghosts and whatnot? I got to see an arm. Where's the rest of it? But I want to go back and watch it again.
Oh my God.
I want to watch it again with proper expectations. Cause this movie's got some decent ratings on Rotten Tomato and whatnot. So I think there's something there.
I call that Rotten Tomato bombing. I assume.
Yeah, that's fair too. I mean, that's quite possible, but I've heard other people that was on a watch and chat just this past Sunday on Slack. I haven't heard any responses to it, but.
Schnars, why don't you unleash your burden here for us this evening?
I don't want to sit here and just slaughter this movie. I just don't.
I'm just reading your aura, which is a little intense this evening.
Oh, no. Well, that's not entirely due to this movie, but there's all kinds of things going on over here. There is a point 30 to 40 minutes into this movie. I ended up having to split it up. I turned it off like sort of right after the sort of seance sequence. So you have the seance, Larry Fessenden then shoots himself. immediately I was like, oh, fuck. Because Larry Fessenden, oh, these are all like interesting.
He's fun to watch before he disappears.
Yeah, he's a he's a scenery chewer.
He's chewing it up and he's
doing
well.
Anytime he's in a movie, I'm sort of on board for it. So I should say, I did not know anything about this movie. Literally.
Same.
I didn't know, like.
I didn't know it was a period piece until the title card came out.
Brooklyn 45. I was like, I don't know what the 45 is. It's set in Brooklyn. I was like, this is a New York
movie. In fact, I think I was expecting more of like, not that this isn't why I didn't like it. I was expecting more of like some kind of hipster horror movie.
I didn't know what to expect. I had seen the poster. That was it. So, but I knew Larry Fessenden was in it. He is always good for some craziness. So as soon as he dies, I a little bit of the wind came out of my sails. And so I had to turn off. I picked it up the next day and finished it, the rest of it in one sitting. When I started it back up after he dies, there's like 45 minutes where fucking nothing happens but a bunch of people talking about things that happened somewhere else during World War II. And not, I mean, like some of them are sad things and bad things and yada yada. We live in such a fucked up world that it felt like all these people were talking about complete nonsense. So I don't know. I mean, Eric, you were joking a little bit about, the fact that one of the main characters is a very highly regarded female interrogator, which feels like something that, you know, Zero Dark 30 made us think was possible during like the Iraq War, but like World War II.
I believe what I said was no way these dudes in 1940 actually respected this woman. And I mean that just commenting on like social mores. And
it was 1945.
They're like, she's so badass. She like bent this guy's finger back. I'm like, is this like, where's the source material
here? Yeah. There's also one of the main characters is a gay soldier. He's also the one who committed the war crime. And
they talk openly about it in a way that did not feel like period.
Yeah, it specific. Just, I mean, look, like we weren't alive in 1945. Like maybe
neither
army
were the
dudes
people that
were just joking about this stuff the way they are.
You know
in this
who
movie.
Else wasn't alive in 1945? Larry Fessenden. He's not that old.
Yeah, true. I don't.
And I'm sure he's the oldest person involved in this movie.
Buzzington, 66, I saw.
Yeah, Buzzington's upper.
So, and not even he was there, John.
No, totally. No, but so like, I don't know. It's all like very, very bizarre. I guess the way I would describe this movie to someone who's thinking about watching it is a one act play set in one room. Where like not a ton of spooky shit happens, but there is these are all professional actors who are, you know, I don't want to like overly praise them, but they're good. Like it is like well performed, but it's performed as if it was a play. That's how it felt to me. And Casey, I guess I'm sort of agreeing, you know, the point you were making about,
yeah, you're not far off. I can see the comparison.
Yeah, like it felt like a, you know, they were trying to do something in that direction. There's just not that much horror here.
It's more horrific things, right?
Or I think that's a pretty valid criticism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call what I have to say like a compliment sandwich. So let's call it like a compliment, like open face sandwich, because it just kind of has the one layer of bread. But I, you know, most of the time when you see, because I think you described it perfectly, John, this is like a one room, you know, play kind of setup. And like Caitlin was on Twitter or Instagram was saying like, you know, wouldn't this make a great stage play? Sure. And I think usually when you see those kind of ensemble-y movies like this, it's usually with like big stars. And so there's something I appreciate and is kind of neat about seeing these smaller and some of these, like some of the actors are like a little more obscure. Some of them are like pretty legit character actors, just a different, like they're not all leading people. They're not all like majorly famous. Right.
Yeah.
But like it's cool seeing a group of like understated actors who aren't usually getting this opportunity get all this stuff to chew on. And it is like, I like pretty much everybody in the cast. It is a bummer to see Fessenden go early, obviously, but I imagine
he's moan some. There's some moan.
I imagine. Yeah. I mean, I don't. We'll talk about that. I imagine he's a busy gentleman and has stuff to do. But so there's something that I find kind of endearing just about the setup in general. I enjoy Buzzington a lot. He's pretty intense. Although I like, again, just some of the things with the characters just feels kind of not right for the time period. I think that what it feels like is like an episode of an anthology series. Like, this should be a creep show, a modern creep show episode. And what I mean by that is that's a show I don't watch. So go put it somewhere where I don't have to watch it.
No, but there's like, a 40 minutes.
Yeah. And like, you could, it's much more action packed. Cause I think that the biggest flaw or issue that I have with it is that once Fessenden kills himself, there's an hour of the movie where only dialogue happens. Yeah. And I get it. Again, it's like a stagey kind of setup. But the drama just flat out is not engaging enough to sustain you for an hour while you're waiting for the next spooky thing to happen. And I honestly think that it would have been easy to introduce a little more spooky atmosphere and scary things in the middle of this section to at least help buoy it all a little bit. Like, all means, make a movie that's dialogue based and that's like it seems really interested in just talking about morality and war, right? And like dealing with the PTSD of war and all this stuff. And that can be interesting. I'm not saying there's nothing there, but like there's just all of the tension drains out. Even Ezra Buzzington like threatening to kill the neighbor is kind of like, all right, like,
dude, well, here's the thing. The main ghost.
How many times are you going to say it?
The main ghost is this closet that is banging during the seance. And then they reveal that it's banging because the neighbor is locked up in the closet. She now escapes. So this is where it turns out that Larry Fessenden, before he killed himself, had kidnapped the female neighbor, Christina Cleaver.
That his wife thought was a spy.
Yeah. May or may not actually be a spy. We can talk about it. I don't know.
Was I just not catching that? Like that wasn't really answered.
So my read is that ultimately we're supposed to think she may have actually been a spy or it didn't really matter.
She does make
the purposes of them getting out of the
room.
She
makes that commander comment, which is the one thing that was like really pointed, I thought.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, but then ultimately, I mean, without whatever, we can get to the end, but for them to get out of the room, the ghost that has locked them in is sort of requiring that she is killed, whatever.
It's like, you know how in like a video game, you walk into an arena and then it locks and you can't get out until you've defeated the boss? That's what it was like.
Yeah. No, yeah, yeah. Sure. But like to your point,
like there might as well have just been a glowing thing around the door. So you're like, wait.
Yeah, and they like, but they hang all this stuff on. First, it's like you're scared that there's ghosts, but then they sort of undercut all the ghosts. Then maybe there's ghosty stuff happening, and that sort of ramps back up. But there is a good 15 minutes of this movie, which is Major whatever Buzzington pointing a gun at the neighbor, and you're just like, who gives a shit, man? Like, just kill
her.
There's
not a lot of tension there, and they're kind of riding it on that being all the tension, and it doesn't
matter. Yeah, especially with those moments like that, and what they're going for, I think, or at least my interpretation of what they're going for, and trying to remake something with the 1945 spiel. This would have been much better in like an anthology or something.
Yeah.
Because there is a lot of extra meat that could have been trimmed in there from the dialogue that we just ultimately don't care. From the movies, I think they're trying to pay homage to, that's very much on par for those movies. I was looking it up while you guys were talking. This reminds me of what stands out in my mind the most is a movie from 43 called I Walked with a Zombie, which is pretty famous, directed by Jacques Tourneur. Mm. This feels like that kind of movie.
Do like a bunch of people sit around talking about like bad things that have happened to them?
Way more talking than zombies, I could tell you that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I sort of It held my interest more or less for the run. It's not that long. Like,
there is something a little cozy about the setup of I could picture watching this by fire and just like zoning out.
Well, okay. And I was joking about this over text. They fucking drink more whiskey in this movie than I think any movie I've ever seen.
Well, they were talking about how at one point they were off to the side right after Larry Fessenden offed himself, I think. And they were talking about how they're pretty sure he drank two bottles of whiskey before they even got there. I'm like, how's he even walking?
Well, they had to get through the war. So the tolerance got pretty high at that point, presumably.
And now the other thing, talking about like with the cultural differences, which I think are valid points, like, you know, they're accepting that this woman was a female, was an extraordinary interrogator in the army in 1945. And, you know, the very gay war criminal and whatnot, being a soldier and everything. Those are very out of place and feel out of touch with what the period they're going for. But I think there was a lot of talk and mentions of through this about how this group of people all grew up, like, were friends from childhood and they knew each other, which is to me how is kind of meant to explain away a lot of that stuff as far as the cultural differences.
So the only issue I take with that is that then you have to believe that there's this group of people who are all friends as kids who all rise to be extremely senior level in the
war where they serve together. I just refuse to believe people in the 40s were talking about their feelings based on what I know about my grandparents.
How many times
my grandfather ever spoke about the war?
Similar.
Do you know how many times he hugged me, John? Never once.
Yeah, only one of my grandfathers fought in the war, and he like spoke about it if you asked him explicitly, and even then it was like, you know, he had a purple heart. I have no idea how he got it.
My grandpa's got a funny story on how he got his purple heart in World War II, but I can share that with you later. No,
was it VD? No.
No, my grandpa was taking a shit on a hill and got one of his testicles shot off in World War II by a sniper.
Damn, dude. Wow. Like mid shit.
And he came home to give birth to my twin uncles and my mom. So it was all good.
Man, that's brutal. What aim?
I know. That's impressive shot.
He's a real sharpshooter.
Yeah, Ryan was saying that the paranormal aspect is completely forgettable. I think they forgot it. If you didn't know that you were supposed to be watching a horror movie, it would have felt, so put it this way, there's a version of this movie where you take out the seance piece and it's more or less unchanged. It's
barely a horror movie that piece.
I'm saying it's not a horror movie at all. Like, you could make a version of this that isn't a horror movie at all. That's mostly the same movie, or in like certainly that's all the same.
It was kind of a bummer because when that hand comes out of the table, the effect is like, it's a little low rent, but in a way I really liked. I could totally get, you just muted yourself, Casey. I was like, I could totally get into this kind of vibe with the supernatural stuff that never happens again in the rest of the movie.
Yeah. But at the same time, I'm not like an expert on the horror films of the 40s, but going back to I Walked with a Zombie, that's not that different. The zombies in that movie, they're more of the voodoo zombies. And a lot of the times we see them, they're kind of standing off in a corner in the shadows staring and not really doing a whole lot. There's not a whole lot of crazy action in those movies from that era. That's what makes me think they're trying to lean into recreating that kind of movie. The lack of paranormal bits within this movie, because we do see like another ghost show up later on that crawls across the floor and screams in somebody's face or something. And that's really about it. But that's not that different from those movies from that era. That's what makes me think that they're trying to redo that. Not now. Does that mean that this works in this era? Not for everybody. No, I think there's probably a niche that this movie is probably made for. And maybe they made it just for their own artistic you know, boners.
Oh, this was definitely, I mean, the budget here is excessively low.
Levi on Shudder Levi on YouTube wants to know why it's on Shudder. And my response to that is, what do you want from me, Levi? What do I look like to you?
They got a deal.
I mean, there's
horrific aspects going on.
Honestly,
in this movie,
no, but this is exactly the kind of thing you see on Shudder originals, like budget, tone, like the way it looks, all of it, other than the fact that it's just not that horror-y. But
well, I feel like if you put Larry Fessenden in your movie, Shudder's giving you a look no matter what, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Thanks, Julie.
Shot in the butt, Casey. That's just unreal.
No, shot in the nut.
Shot in the ball.
Right? They shot around the butt.
All I can think is, like, did he finish the poop and then get shot? Or was he mid-poop? And then you're just laying there with one ball pooping yourself? Like,
yeah, I don't know. That would suck.
Horrendous. I mean, the other one must have been fine because you're here.
Yeah. Like so, I said, he came home and bothered a set of twins and my mom. So he did pretty good.
Yeah, not too shabby. He's a real hero. Love it. Anything else you guys want to talk about this movie?
I don't think.
I did enjoy the cast. I thought they were spot on. That's just what they were given to work with. And
yeah,
I think this feels kind of like experimental and something that the creators wanted to get out of their system. And they probably got some money to help make this happen, but maybe from AMC. I don't know. I mean, Ted Geoghegan's pretty well versed in horror and he's fairly well known. I think, you know, there's probably a small studio out there that said that he went and said, hey, I got a big idea. And they probably said, OK, here you go. Here's a couple million. Go do what you got to do.
I don't even think it was a couple million. That would be my
guess. That's just coming off right off the top of my head. Not by all accurate.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right. Would you recommend Brooklyn 45, Casey?
If you like old movies, yes. If you're a Hammer fan.
Jonathan?
No.
I'm also a no. That's a no for me, dog.
Yeah.
But, you know, it has its moments.
It's not a hard no. I'm not like...
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm not upset.
Go fuck yourself.
There's better stuff to watch, though.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. Let's take a quick break and do some fan mail.
Madeline before potion. After potion. Helen before potion and after potion.
Sex.
They've discovered the secret to eternal beauty.
No warning.
But the side effects.
You pushed me down the stairs.
Can be deadly.
Oh, damn. Just look at me.
Meryl Streep, Bruce Willis, and Goldie Hawn. Death becomes her. Rated PG-13.
Hey, this is Sasha Jensen from Halloween 4, and you're listening to Bloody Good Horror.
Send feedback to info@bloodygoodhorror.com or on Twitter using #AskPGH. Join Patreon to get back episodes and much more. Patreon.com/bloodygoodhorror.
And we're back. We left last week's show with the cliffhanger of how to connect Toby Hooper to Samantha Eggar. 50% of those people, I know who they are. Gina wrote in. It goes Toby Hooper to Bill Moseley to Karen Black to Oliver Reed to Samantha Eggar. Texas Chainsaw 2, Devil's Rejects, Burnt Offerings to the Brood. So there you go. And for what it's worth, Joe never got it. He actually wrote me back the next morning after we recorded and was like, I was on the right track. Maybe he did get it. He just didn't type it out. The connective tissue, he had a different way, is Felix Silla, S-I-L-L-A. He was in Poltergeist, and he played one of the Brood. Oh, so that's a direct link, right? That's a one-to-one?
I guess.
Because Hooper directs, directed Poltergeist. He was in that, and then he was also in The Bird. All right. Joe wins it, I guess. Thank you to Gina. That's all we got in emails. Casey, do we have anything on Twitter?
Yeah, we got two tweets out there this week. First one comes from @WellHorror, and it's a question directly for me. Casey, do you have a favorite horror comic? Which is a good question. My horror comics, I got really into Constantine and Preacher, which Preacher's horror adjacent, I think, probably safe to say.
I only read the first two like collections, like maybe 12 issues. I would definitely say horror.
Yeah. Yeah. And like there's the TV show they made for that on AMC. Pretty decent, too.
Yeah. I never watch. I know people that really liked it. Can I answer this one, too?
Yeah, go for it.
No,
fuck you.
The Alan Moore Swamp Thing, which yes. I'm calling Swamp Thing also horror, which whatever, people can come at me if they want. It's like one of my favorite comics like ever. Casey, I can't remember if we probably didn't talk about it because Eric doesn't like when we talk about comics. Have you read any of the Boom? I think they're called Boom. It's like the publisher.
John, can you actually read my mind right now? That was crazy.
Mm-hmm. They had a comic called Something's Killing the Children.
I have heard of it. I have not read that one.
I read maybe like the first 10 issues. I liked it. My thing with Boom as a publisher is that I felt like every issue was shorter than it should be. Let's say like 10 minutes tops of reading, which, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, Boom did like some of the Isn't Armies of the Darkness movies and stuff too, or comics, I think too.
Oh, they may have. Yeah.
And Evil Dead.
What's that? What? Eric?
That's my, whatever. We don't need to get into why I don't like comic books, Sean. It's cool. You guys can enjoy what you enjoy. Levi is with you. We did have a question. Was that it for Twitter, Casey?
Oh, yeah, one more tweet, actually. I will throw out one other comic out there. I couldn't think of the name of it, but it just popped back onto me. It's called Hack Slash, I believe.
I've read some of that.
That one's pretty fun. They play a lot. They joke a lot with the slasher tropes, so good times. Our other tweet here comes from @LovelyDeadAdam. If you're questioning whether or not the Bone Woman movie was really horror or not, then prepare to have the conversation again. Was this horror or just a horrific stage play put on film?
Here's what I will say. Bone Woman, more of a horror movie than this movie.
Oh, my God. I was already in that was horror camp, so.
I'm still not.
But the ending of this with how everybody went out wasn't the slightest horrific to you guys?
No, sure. But man. But large portions of the movie are just, you don't even know you're in a genre movie.
Yeah. You drop someone in and they can watch 15 minutes of this and not know it's a horror movie at all.
Well, that's the key point, though, is what Eric said earlier, that outside you could cut out the seance part and this would still be the same movie. Mm-hmm. Pretty much.
Question from Levi on YouTube. Have you guys heard James Wan wants to do Call of Cthulhu? Now, Casey, is that a specific book or is that just like a thing?
Call of Cthulhu, I believe, was a short story written that was like kind of the introduction to Cthulhu.
It's basically just the Cthulhu story. Because obviously I'm aware of it as like, a large thing.
Lovecraft has a lot more short stories and novellas than novels. And Cthulhu pops up as a character in other stories, too. I think Call of Cthulhu was like the one that was actually about.
Bro,
originated around him.
I tried reading some Lovecraft once. Did not take.
It's a challenge. It's difficult for me, and I like to read.
I would be cool, though. I think
down for anything James Wan wants to do in genre.
The Cthulhu-y stuff is why people love Underwater so much. So it would be really cool to see that done, like not just as a kind of an after, thought.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't have a problem with James Wan. I'm not like a big I'm not a big fan of the Wanaverse, but other stuff he's done, I've enjoyed. And I mean, if nothing else, you can't argue the fact that dude knows how to put together a film universe. So if this is the opening to him starting some kind of Lovecraftian universe, bring it on board. I see that guy mapping it out. No problem.
I love the idea that he would used a multi-hundred million dollar blockbuster like Aquaman to train to make a Cthulhu movie.
Yeah.
Just ocean stuff, John. He's just, you know, just playing the sandbox.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what we currently have from our live viewers. Let's check the gram, John.
Gram it up.
Will you be reviewing Beau is Afraid? I'd consider it a personal favor. Okay. I think it's going to happen.
We have it on the list. It's just a question of when, really.
Is it more horror than Brooklyn 45?
Maybe not, from what
that
I see.
That may be all the justification we need.
Ari Aster made two movies that are like the demand that we do this movie. At least check this one out and see what it's about.
Yeah. Well, we can always break out that old chestnut too. We did Batman on this show, so we can do both.
True. Right? Plug it up pod. Wouldn't this make for a cool stage play in one place and in real time?
Yeah.
Not for me, but I get it. Like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I like stage plays are fine. And it is a stage play running time, too. It's a
right.
There's no cutting, like, there's no time jumps in this movie. It's a one act play. Like, there's not even a second act you need to worry about.
Zach says, no questions. Just imagine a world where ghosts could reach out to you through your puke. That is what happened. Next up, Rory. This is for you, Schnars. What's the scariest burrow?
Well, so Queens has this very famous, humongous cemetery. I think it's
he means like a different kind of scary, John. Like, where are you worried about getting murdered?
I mean, you can get murdered kind of all over the place. So I don't know. Staten Island. There's no way to get off Staten Island if you know.
I wish I knew the name of it, but there is an amazingly cool cemetery in Boston that literally John Hancock is buried in, like a bunch of figures from like the Revolution and stuff. But it's just surrounded by tall city buildings, and they just left it there, and it's just like one square kind of like plot. And it's just the oldest graves you've ever seen. And like at some point they dug a vent from the subway up in the middle of the cemetery. It's just wild. It's like chaos.
Yeah. There's demons.
Fun fact, John Hancock's grave looks like a giant penis. I'm not making that up. Would you rather watch a ghost hunting show or a Bigfoot hunting show?
Oddly,
I know what Casey's answer is.
Ghost hunting shows are just the dirt worst, so I'm going to go Bigfoot.
I've actually watched more ghost. So Colleen's big into ghost hunting shows. I watch them passively sometimes, but I would actually. She's watched the Bigfoot Hunter show that was on, whatever Discovery a couple years ago. I would much rather watch a ghost hunter show. Those Bigfoot Hunter shows are god awful.
I will say that Netflix I'm sure we talked about it, but Elizabeth and I were watching over the fall, like Halloween season, Netflix released some kind of ghost hunting show where they were like putting different crews around the country in like haunted places for like 30 days. And it was the most unintentionally funny thing I've ever seen in my life. And it was so entertaining. So maybe
my justification is though, like ghost hunting shows, you at least see them exploring like old abandoned buildings or something like that. Whereas in the Bigfoot hunting shows, it's Bobo, and I'm not making that name up, out in the middle of the woods, hooting off into the darkness and then bringing stuff like piles of donuts for Bigfoot bait. And I'm, again, not making
piles
that up.
Piles of donuts?
Yeah.
You trying to give Bigfoot the beatus? What the hell,
yes,
man? Bigfoot ain't used to that kind of food. What's wrong with you?
I know. They eat pretty granola, right? They got to be.
My gay roommate just walked in as the characters in this movie were tossing out F slurs. Any similar experiences ever happened to you? I mean, when you're not specifically that, but when you're watching horror, like you got to be careful. Like you just never know what's going to happen.
I could see where that, I mean, we were talking about how it felt out of place, but they definitely are using language that is
part of it. I swear character. Like in the, cause it's Ezra, what's his name?
Buzzington.
Buzzington. I almost said Ezra Miller, different person. Like, I don't know if I'm just like projecting this, but it almost felt like as an actor, he was so uncomfortable saying it. Like, he didn't sound very convincing saying, and that somehow made it sound more offensive than it already did.
Yeah.
At what age did you learn New York City was more than just Times Square and Broadway?
Like 45.
I've only been there twice, and that's more or less where I've been. So I don't know that I know that.
I mean, I moved here when I was 22, so...
That's wild.
How long ago was the BGH business meeting? That's when I learned.
Why did you move there eventually? I don't know if we've ever asked you that. Or why did you move there originally?
I just decided when I was, you know...
He's a high society boy. Home.
Were you single at the time?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, single, ready to mingle? Moved to
I was
city?
Single. I didn't have a job. I was just like, fuck it. I did not have a lot of money in my name. I was living in an apartment. Maybe we talked about this with, it was a 3-bedroom apartment. There were 5 of us living there.
Wow. So, and that was like, you moved at 22. What were you, like 25 when we started the show?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I thought you were married when we started the show. So you weren't in New York City.
I got married when I was 26. So, I mean, Suzanne and I started dating like, you know, in the first year we were living in New York. So
what was your first job?
I was interning at a couple places doing like website nonsense. And I was trying to be a freelance writer. That was like what I was doing when I first got here.
That's probably how you connected with us.
Yeah. Yeah.
All these years later.
And then he realized this guy's not going to pay me.
All these years later, still never been paid.
No. Well, honestly, like a large part of why I wanted to be writing at BGH is because I was taking a job where I wasn't going to be writing full time. And so I was like, I don't need to get paid to do the writing.
Paid in my friendship. So I think that's
And the adulation of the horror community.
Easy lover.
Yeah, that's right. Which ghost of a person from your past would you want to reach out to?
Oh, Lord.
I was like, what are you trying to send us to therapy here? Yeah. That's the last question of the night, by the way. How about we just make it any person, in which I'm going to say George Carlin is the ghost I'd like to hang out with.
Dude, you and Mark, George Carlin, fucking super fans.
Dude, he's the best.
George live.
Man, jealous. He came through on tour a couple years before he died. It was probably like one of his last tours, and I didn't end up going. I was going to regret it.
It's probably that same tour because I saw him it was in the beginning of my sophomore year of college. So it would have been 93.
Oh, no. This was 2000s.
Wow.
Still doing it. I'm sure it was a different kind of show.
My answer would be my mom's dad, who passed away when I was in high school. He was the German. Herbert Terstappen, and I just want to know, did anyone accuse him of being a Kraut spy? We didn't even talk, guys. We didn't even talk, and now I completely forgot I wanted to bring this up. This movie feels so out of place because, like, most of it hinges on the fact that they are, like, racially discriminating against a German person who's, like, a, like, fairly sexy-looking young woman. Like, it's just, like, and they're, like, calling her dirty Kraut and things like that. It's very weird. Like, the whole movie is weird.
In context, though, once you realize it was in 1945, my thought was, like, well, it's right after the war, so I guess that makes sense. They're still bitter.
But again, like, so my mom's family moved here in 1933. Well, actually, my grandfather was born here in like 29. He went back to Germany.
So they got out of Dodge before all the bad stuff happened.
Well, they went back to Germany. Then they came back to the U.S. Yeah, like in 33 when things were getting a little hairy. And basically we're here 33 to whatever, you know, he passed in the late 20th century. And at no point did he ever tell me that anyone called him a dirty Kraut. I mean, look, I got to find out now.
That doesn't mean it didn't happen. But I mean, I imagine there was some of that, but yeah.
He ran a bakery called Terstappen's Bake Shop.
Listen,
from 1964 to present.
I had a boss, okay? I had a boss. We're good friends. He's from Boston, from like Mark Wahlberg. Like literally, he grew up down the street from Mark Wahlberg. Like that's how Boston he is. And he told me that him and his wife decided they wanted to go to Germany for their honeymoon. And like people in their families gave them shit about it. Like relating to World War II animosity.
Damn.
Like, really? You're gonna go to Germany? Like, So it's still out there, John.
Yeah.
I mean, Germany's gotten rid of the Nazis and the Berlin Wall. I think they're good.
Yeah, there's still some Nazis. Let's just. Well, yeah, there's Nazis in the United States.
It's too. Much better than it was.
10 years ago, you could say that. It's a little different now.
Yeah.
I believe that's it, guys. I don't know what we are doing next week.
Next week, we're doing The Blackening.
The Blackening in theaters this weekend.
But we can always pivot and we might.
Yeah, we're going to have to talk about that because I don't know if I'm going to make it to the theater.
That's right.
Eric's I don't think I'm going to be able to, but. We will TBD. We do want to do The Blackening, but we'll figure it out.
Okay.
All right, y'all. That's going to do it. Hope you enjoyed this episode of Bloody Good Horror, and we'll talk to you next week.
See you.
Bye-bye.